Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. We sit down with the owners of one of my favorite new restaurants in Los Angeles, Amiga Amore. We're chatting with Danielle Duran Zecca and Alessandra Zecca, who opened up this Highland Park neighborhood-focused Mexitalan serving instant classic. We chat about their time cooking in New York, then moving back to LA, and the music and comfort that you can feel when you dine with them. Also, we recorded the day before they found out they were semi-finalists for the James Beard Awards. So congratulations to them and everyone else in the food community who received a nod. And then keeping up with our recent Philadelphia trend, we are heading back to the archives to hang out with Philadelphia's Odd Kid Out. At 20 years old, he co-created Fact Magazines and he was at the show to talk about and play his new single, Moonwalk. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HRN. Danielle and Alessandro, welcome to Snacky Tunes. Thank you for making the time. Fan of the restaurant, excited to have you on the show.
Thank you
for having us.
You know, when I went in last year with my wife and a few friends, even though you were relatively new, it almost instantaneously felt like a neighborhood restaurant, which for a relatively new space is somewhat hard to capture. How were you able to dial in that feeling and that vibe right away?
I think it's always been part of, you know, what we wanted Amigo Amor to feel like, was we always said it needed to feel like you were at your, like, abuela's house or your nonna's house. Like, it had to feel like, you know, comfort. I think that was our number one thing when, like, you know, going into the restaurant and seeing, you know, what it felt like and seeing the space that we wanted. And I think that's when we found, like, our home was, you know, that location. It felt like a house. And we both kind of looked at each other and said, even though it needs everything, it has nothing in it, we both really felt like this is where we could achieve it.
It's a sign on top. Is it a watch shop, if I remember correctly? Or what is the...
Anthony's Jewelry.
Jewelry, so, yes.
Yeah. And yes. The husband of our landlord. And so we just felt like it's such a landmark, the location. Like, we didn't want to make it feel like new. I mean, I grew up in Highland Park, so it was actually back in the day a restaurant called El Arco Aris. They were like a small family-owned restaurant. And so I wanted to leave things that felt like, you know, old school.
I have to say, it reminded me of what restaurants openings used to be like, where it did have that old touch to the neighborhood. It wasn't this mega PR machine. It felt part of the local community in a way that I think I hadn't seen or felt for a while, to the point where I didn't even realize I was missing it.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays it's became through social media and all of that, a little bit difficult to don't be involved in those. Even if you don't want it, for example, even if you don't want to be on Yelp, they write you a review and you're on Yelp. So sometimes you have no choices to be on platform or social media. So I totally understand. I grew up in a restaurant where, in Italy especially, where there was none of these things, and still barely they're getting now, bringing all the stuff. So people really come word of mouth. And that's how we built, to be honest with you, that's how we started building our business. Because during the pop-ups, I remember clearly the beginning was like we were doing 10 people maybe, and mostly was family. Then they started doing 20. Then somebody talked to their friends, brought another friends. And all of a sudden, we started filling up the spots. Community. We had a community, and this community became our guests when we opened the doors. It took us four years to be able to build a little bit of a community behind us, a little bit of some, you know, a guest list. So
it's amazing. Now, before we get into the pop-ups and what you built in LA, you know, you mentioned your abuela and your nona. You both come from really strong culinary families. So who cooked in the house when you were growing up, and how early were you drawn into the kitchen or to the idea of working in food?
Well, I grew up, my mom always, you know, in Italy, most of the people cook at home. So I literally grew up every morning waking up to the smell of something that she was cooking and go in the kitchen, you know, be excited. I don't know that you should know that we're having lunch and we're all talking, what's for dinner? So, you know, we all food. So I really grew up around that. And when I was in my teenage years, my family took over a restaurant. So that's where my career started. But I was never really into cooking the food myself, because I found it always too, too complicated, you know, too much stressful. I like to be on the outside. So that's why, you know, with Danielle work well, because she create the food and I'm going there and sell it out. That was the whole idea that we started with. But yeah, so my mom and for Danielle.
Yeah, I definitely grew up with my grandmothers and the both of them cooking. My parents both worked when I was, you know, young, so they would watch me, and yeah, it was really revolved around food. I feel like a family event, even in like a Mexican household, you start in the kitchen, like something's happening, you're all congregating around there, and you're not even like going to the set dinner table. So I knew that I loved cooking. I didn't know I was going to be a chef. I actually thought I was going to go to school for fashion design, because I also had a real love for sewing. And so, yeah, I think cooking just won it over a little bit more. But I, through my high school years, I actually, I wanted my grandmother's recipes. So, and she never wrote anything down. So every Sunday I spent with her, we would make a new recipe. So I have like a cherished recipe book that says, like, you know, one of grandma's pinches. So two of my pinches will be right. Salt. Yes. So yeah, I think, and having that, and now, like, I knew we always wanted a restaurant, but we had many ideas. So I think it wasn't until I kind of honed into those recipes and my family that then it kind of all came together.
Now, you started cooking in LA, but you eventually wound up in New York, which, you know, was an adventure before you eventually returned home. But what drew you to the kitchens of New York at that time? Why go cross country instead of cooking around your hometown?
To be honest, my parents are going through a divorce right at that time. And I think it was a way for me to not be sucked into the drama, was I had to go somewhere.
Sure.
That's one part. And the second part was, I am, Walter Mansky is my mentor. So
shout out.
And BC Clay. And so
yeah,
it was the time that he left Church and State. We were on the search for what would now be Republic, but it was just, everything was too up in the air. And I didn't really see like LA blossoming at that point. And I wanted really Michelin training. I wanted to work in tough kitchens that made me, you know, better. So, and that is New York City.
Yeah.
So I told Walter that I wanted to either go to Le Bernardin or, you know, Daniel Boulud. And he made a phone call. And I think within 2 weeks, I had a stage interview at Le Bernardin.
Wow. I mean, the power of that network back then is pretty incredible.
It still is. Yeah. It's still a community. Maybe not, you know, as much.
Yeah.
But definitely, I know that, I still have a good old school community, like Walter. I mean, I can call him and I know he'll answer me.
Yeah. Now, Alessandro, similar question to you, because you were front of house in Italy, in Europe, in London, you know, which is where so many people in America aspire to go to for training. Why the reverse and come to New York?
I felt London was a little bit too small for me, to be honest with you. I went there, I spoke no English, no nothing. I barely had money in my pocket. And within a month and a half, I was doing a chef de rang in a French restaurant.
Wow.
I don't know. I just conquered very quick. And then I was like, oh, I want to need something bigger. And I came back to Italy to do a season in Sardinia. I used to do summer season in Sardinia. This Michelin restaurant was, you know, more money, more, you know, more experience. And he kept telling me about New York, you know, he make good money, it's a great restaurant, blah, blah. So I took a plane and it just went out of curiosity and stayed there about 10 years at the end of the day. Then I met Danielle and, you know, but.
That's it. Now I want to talk about, because you do have a very New York City romance, meet cute story, but I'd love for you to share it.
Yeah, so I can go.
It's funny. We both looked at each other like, "Who's gonna start?"
Yeah, we met. I was in crutches and I was crossing the street on Herald Square to go in a pub with my friend and one of Danielle's friends that she's supposed to go out with, and so made some funny faces. So you know, we got started talking. We went inside to the bar, and then an hour after Danielle arrived. Long story short, we are sharing the right train, the train no. ride.
Okay, he's missing some part. Yes, we met at a pub in Herald Square, but I was running extremely late because it was the holidays. So in New York, it was kind of like, you know, blackout period. You're not allowed to miss a day. You're not allowed to go on like vacation. So my friend, I thought she was going to leave and ended up talking to them. So, you know, by the time that I got there, I thought they were all friends. And so I was like, okay, great. You brought friends with you. And she's like, no, I was about to leave. And I saw this guy on crutches. And so we started talking And so, yeah, it ended up being good that she stayed. But we lived off of the same train, and that's where I felt so bad for him because he was on crutches. So I was like, okay, I'll help you get home. And then I asked somebody to get up so he could sit down.
And there it is. That's that. Yeah. But not only that, beyond meeting, you started moving around restaurants together and working in similar spots. So...
yeah, so that was, let's say, that was November or something like that, October.
I would get the job and I would bring a server along.
Past 2 months, 3 months, so I start talking to her, said, I was taking over an Italian restaurant and I had some of my mom's recipe. My mom was coming to do some dishes and I needed somebody to complement the menu, to finish the menu. So she told me, she worked at Modern. I always had the feeling that she was, she was good, right? My gut always been strong for me. So we chatting there on Facebook Messenger. So I get her to a date. I said, look, I need a chef. And you want to come and have me cooking? So finally she said yes to a date. So we go out, 5-10 minutes, we kissed. Short story. After 5 months, we were married. And she was the chef of the restaurant. So
wow. So... like, I don't want to say nepotism, but you knew somebody of how to keep getting jobs in different restaurants, right?
Well, it was like they would hire me as the chef and then I would do a, I'd do a really good job. And then somehow, like the first three, I want to say, were Italian restaurants. So that was just easy. He was, he'd go in, he'd speak Italian to them and then somehow he would just start working there. Which made it easy because that's how we began. I feel like our relationship began working together. So that's where we know how to do that, I think, better than being in the relationship at first.
I mean, you know how to work. You know what front of house is, back of house. Those rhythms maybe as you figured out each other's.
And I think that exactly. And I think that's where we also began to trust each other was – I didn't even have to worry. Like, I just knew he had it in the front. And, that's a huge part of the restaurant, to make sure that the customer service is good, to make sure that you're selling the food, to make sure, that you're not just selling the one dish that everyone goes there for, but a little bit of something else. And to know that, everything is being taken care of.
Amazing. Well, listen, I want to take a quick musical break. And then when we come back, talk about the move from New York to LA, the pop-ups, and eventually opening up your brick and mortar. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm here with Danielle and Alessandro of Amiga Amore. And so you're married, you're working in New York. Everyone knows that it is a grind in the New York restaurant scene at that time. So when does LA start calling to you like it called to so many of us around that era?
When we start coming here more often and we start coming to see the family. And to be honest with you, I really saw the growth in restaurants. So before I used to come here, it was difficult for me to find good food. You know, in New York, there's a lot of Italian food, right? So here, yes. And it was like, you know, different sauces. If it was Italian food, it was, you know, invented Italian food because it wasn't, you know, awesome. I don't know. It was different for me. So I was like, oh. And then every year that I used to come, I see the difference. Oh, my God, this restaurant is much better. And then we went to Rustic Canyon. And Rusty Canyon was a local. Oh my God, somebody actually doing stuff here. And I told Danielle, maybe this is not a bad idea for us to move along because we were looking for a space in New York for ourselves. But we didn't have any money. I barely had my paperwork done with my social security number, none of that. So nobody's going to give me a loan. Nobody's going to give us a loan, you know, to adjust ourselves to open a restaurant because nobody knows us.
It was so expensive.
The place that we have right now in New York will be at least for $10,000. You know, it's very difficult to do our restaurant. My restaurant that I had, she was a chef, it was $18,000 to rent.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to sustain, you know, sustain a business and thinking to have a future with it. You can do it for 2-3 years and then, you know, close the door, but that's not fun. So, you know, slowly saw the opportunity and then we wanted to have a kid, you know, so we're like, okay, what about New York to get a little tight for us? You know, I was tired to also live in this little apartment,
really,
you know,
I mean,
no lights.
360 square feet.
But, you know, so that was it. And we saw more restaurant opening here and more chef coming to LA. They would say, okay, maybe let's jump at the right train at the right time. And we go to LA and let's see what we can do. And the moment we got here, a lot of doors open for us, you know. So it was definitely the right move.
I mean, there is something about coming home, getting new experience in a place like New York, and bringing that back with you to look at the culinary landscape, which, as we all know, Danielle, since you left in that era, really exploded. So when you came back, did you see the opportunity that you felt wasn't there when you left?
Yes. I mean, really, even like you said, the more that we were coming, we were noticing better food, newer restaurants. Like, I mean, even think about it now, like the pizza scene was not what it was.
No.
Really, we did not have good pizza. I think like when I left, it was Domino's or Pizza Hut. It was not, or like, you know, the mom and pop shops that were good, but not like, not what it is today.
Yeah. I mean, now it's like a pizza town. Now it's like the idea of, get pizza anywhere. And you can get different styles of good pizza.
It's good pizza. It's good pizza everywhere. Like sometimes, like it's pizza in New York, pizza's better. I don't know.
We won't go that far. We're going to have like a bagel controversy.
I know. An Italian perspective, you know, I like both. I like all pizzas, but, you know, just there is some good stuff happening around here.
There is. Now, I want to talk a little bit about cuisine and coming back. So obviously you could return. And you've cut your teeth in some of the best restaurants in New York, but it's sort of then doing not the same, but it's just, you know, predictable trajectory. When did you start thinking about a pop-up and when did you start looking in your own personal stories and combining them?
I want to say it happened pretty quickly that I knew that, as much as I loved Union and Bruce and everything, it was too hard coming back and working at a restaurant from what I had just, you know, come off of. Like, Le Cucu was our last one, and it was not only a beautiful restaurant, but it was, we were getting, you know, a lot of recognition. We were getting a Michelin star. We were getting James Beard. We were like, you know, to come off of a high like that and then kind of get a little disappointed. It was just like, I don't think if I work at a restaurant, it's got to be my own. So I knew quickly that I wanted to just do something on our own. So that's where we started, like, the hot sauce and the catering. And then once we were at catering, it was really great. Like, you know, we were our own bosses. It was
a private chef.
I did a private chef gig. but it wasn't my food. It was everything else that they wanted. So I think it was...
Well, she realized that I didn't enjoy much.
There was like two parts. It was me not really enjoying what I was cooking at much, just because it wasn't me. It was like, it was great because it was a lot of different things, but and then being back in LA and being so excited to have like taco trucks or be so close to like you know, where it's kind of like little Mexico here, where it's like and it wasn't like that in New York, so I never really pushed us going to eat Mexican food there. I would just have things like shipped to me, but you know, I never really forced him. And so noticing that he was not enjoying what I was eating, or he would only order like one taco and then order a pizza after, and I'm like, what is happening here?
Right.
And he just didn't like cilantro, and he didn't like corn. He wanted to tell my family he was allergic to things, so he didn't feel bad for not eating, because it's, you know, it's in our households, it's very much the same. Like, food is like love. Like,
yeah,
to give you another plate means like, you know, grandma really likes you. Like, so
sure,
things that he didn't like. And so I think it was like a twofer. He kind of became my project, because I was like, okay, if I can get him to eat something, I know. Like, not that he has a very good palate, but he just knows what he likes.
Right. And I don't want to say stumbled, but you start to realize that there are these similarities between your Mexican heritage and the cooking you did and his Italian cooking background. And now I've had the cuisine, which you've affectionately dubbed Mex-Italian, and I can't believe it hasn't been thought of before, because there's so many similar process and approaches to cooking, and just even, you know, similar dishes seen through different lenses. But how did you stumble, again, not the right word, but how did you refine the process to finding something that, like, these are dishes that absolutely work, make sense, and are not that dirty F word that people might call it?
I think... Well, definitely, like, my extensive culinary background, it had to make sense, you know what I mean? Like, it couldn't be gimmicky. And I think our travels really helped. Like, I've been to Italy a handful of times, and we drive down to, you know, even Baja. We go to TJ all the time, you know? So I think him noticing what he would eat there, and just... Like I said, the travel to see like how cheese was made there and how cheese is done in Mexico, to have like requesón be so similar to ricotta, like the way that we both use tomatoes, the way like some of our sauces take forever. Like, we put a lot of love, a lot of thoughtful flavor, but it's also not overdone. Like, you know, a taco just has cilantro and onion, like, and a salsa. It doesn't have to have, but like, it's in the flavors of what you start with.
Yes.
So I think, and just being creative, really. Like, it also went back to my childhood. What did I love growing up with, and what was so simple? Like, I love our elote, but it's like the simplest thing that, you know, is corn. Mexico is just corn. And so sometimes we laugh, like, our simplest one was the one that like is everybody's favorite.
But I think you've also tapped into this era of where people have gone to the craziest ends of the food, what food could be. And everyone's sort of been walking it back to finding something that's more comforting and more approachable, but still novel. And I think that's what your cuisine really captures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we always said, is a fine dining cuisine, but in a casual setting.
Yes.
So you can definitely see the experience behind the food, you know, so that's what it is for sometimes. And we understand that some people said, oh, it's high price, it's more portion, because, you know, it's more, they're maybe used to go different places.
But we use the highest quality ingredients, and it's all in the prep work. I think people don't realize that, how much it takes to have all those things, because I make everything from scratch. Like, our tahine, our bread is made in-house, every dessert, the cannoli shells, like, all the pastas are done by hand. So that.
Oh yeah.
That was also a little tricky yeah. to figure out at first because, I mean, I was on the pasta table just around the clock, and I felt like I could not make enough.
Oh no,
we're out again. I'm like, oh my gosh.
But it's so interesting that people would balk at the prices because if it was just straight homemade Italian restaurant pasta, people are used to paying that. But maybe because of the perception of like what Mexican food should cost in LA, that's where they start to have an issue.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I see it. I just see the different kind of being in front of the house. I mean, to more or less. Sometimes I really catch. It's funny because the other night I caught somebody and they see it wasn't happy, you know, with another couple. But they weren't just uncomfortable with themselves. You couldn't just tell, you know, maybe they had a fight, whatever, you know. And they were cold. So they went, you know, they ate the food, but then they left a 3-star review saying, you know, a few things. And I'm like, I told them, yeah, I know who they are because I felt them because everybody else was happy. Everybody finished the food. You know what I mean? Being up for the house, up for me to discover those things. And then you realize that, you know, you kind of see what kind of people come to eat. And then, you know, you understand what kind of clientele you have because that is very important to know when you need to, you know, prepare event or stuff like that. You know, just you need to know what kind of people you have in the house.
No, you know, house is a great word to use. And Danielle, knowing that you come from a love of fashion and design and sewing, that makes a lot of sense of how the design and the space feels. Because there's a lot of texture, there's a lot of colors. Now, obviously, you were a mobile pop-up for so long. So what was it like to finally open up your own spot and to be able to make a home to invite people into?
Oh, it was. Sometimes I look at it and I'm like, wow, I feel proud of it. I feel like we both had two different visions, but I think that on some things he listened to me and sure. saw like for sure the bar.
I still think you listened to me though.
No, I did. But you know, I wanted it to feel elegant but not too cheesy Mexican. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I wanted the benches to I wanted it to also feel homemade. So a lot of it like we did do ourselves. Like all of the chairs we went to a thrift store and wow. we would just be like on the hunt for them and then he would spray paint it and I would fix them if they needed. And I sewed all of the cushions. So it was like, you know, and I wanted that to be like where the Mexican fabric came in. But we went to Mexico so many times to get the tiles, to get certain glassware so that it tied together. Like, you know, things didn't have to necessarily all match, but they needed to have that same sense. And then like the plates, that's where I got, you know, very, I think like chef and Michelin, because those needed to be beautiful. So we definitely went shopping. One of a good friend of mine knows somebody in Mexico that made one of our plates, and it was just, they're gorgeous. I love them. It's like what the cavatelli served on. So we wanted to like give back to smaller craftsmen.
I love that.
We didn't want to get things that were just so commercial. So we wanted to be unique, and we thought about each little detail, like even our wine list, we're trying to get more from Baja. We're just trying to do it, but do it right. Not like I said, it's also our experiences being in New York and seeing really fine dining and doing just those little touches. Like, I mean, you said it was like a house, but I don't know which grandma's table side pouring agua chile broth, but that's where I like come in and I'm like, I need to elevate it so that you feel good in there.
But there is that emotional part of it where you walk in and it feels familiar, and then you get this incredible food and tableside service and these drinks. And I've talked to people, I myself had this like very emotional reaction to the food. What is it about the whole combination that really hits people in that core?
I mean, I think it's even us being so emotional and what we built.
I see people all the time, mostly like girls, because, you know, our men sometimes we hide our emotion, but like, a lot of girls tell me that it reminds of grandma cooking and make a reminder of that dish or of that dish that grandma used to cook. So I believe also that the Danielle grandma's training come out on everything, you know, because at the end of the day, that's what it is too, like, you know. It's a product of love. It's a product, nothing else we can do. It's a, more love you put in, more love comes out.
We love what we do. We love what we do there especially, but it's cooking with love. It's cooking from the heart. It's things that, like I said, I grew up with. It's me thinking back to, like, Chili Colorado on rainy days. And what does that represent? That represents a hug, like, you know, like menudo on Sundays after church, like, you know, what did that do? That's not just a dish, it's a memory. It's like, you know what? And sometimes, yeah, like you said, some people do tell me that I brought them back to that, or that chile relleno, they closed their eyes and it took them back to their grandma. And like, how did I do that? And it's like, because I grew up with the same sort of, you know, Mexican grandma that cooked just simple things, but really put a lot of love into it.
I love it. Now, I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about the music and the soundtrack that also set the vibe, because it was a hit parade. Just being in there of just songs that were so good that obviously there was a lot of thought put into it. So who made the playlist?
It's been a lot of, it's been in the making for like every pop-up, you know, we would add another song, or we would go to Italy and like, you know, his sister would be driving us and playing like this new song. And we're like, oh, that's good.
Oh, you that's know? Awesome. Like,
So, yeah, it's a lot of the songs I grew up with.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, I grew up with, I know the words I sing around the restaurant. and then we added the Mexican part, so the Italian part, and then we added the Mexican part where I needed to be more Spanish song because we really wanted to be on branding. And we wanted to answer Mexican, so then we started looking into, you know, what Daniel grew up with and what Mexican music was, you know, and now we... And now every time that we listen to a new one, we add it to the playlist. And so, but yeah, we got a few people that told us we have good music. So
good
that's
playlist.
Good.
Or can we share it with them?
Happy to hear it.
Yeah. Well, I love it. And I cannot say congratulations enough. If people want to make a reservation or check out the food or just see what you're up to, where can they see what you got going on?
So we accept reservations through Talk.
Nice.
You just type in Amiga More, and that's Wednesday to Saturday for dinner. And then Sunday brunches, we accept walk-ins. It's a different sort of service. So I think if you want to come try something and you don't want to make a reservation, Sunday is the day to just come in, get some chilaquiles with pasta, or we're doing an elote croissant. So everything is made in-house, like I said. So all the pastries are just really, really good.
We got pozole for the winter as well.
Oh, yeah. I got a rabbit pozole.
Ooh.
Yes.
Yes. Well, listen, thank you so much for making the time. I can't wait to come back in. And congratulations on everything. I'm excited
thank
to see
so
how it develops.
Sure. Thank you. We can't wait to have you back.
Yes. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
It's okay. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush, green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back. We have Odd Kid Out. Live
hey,
video.
Hey, hey.
Can I call you Odd Kid or can I call you Butch?
You can call me Butch.
Okay, Butch. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming up from Philly.
For sure.
Darren and I are from Philly as well.
No
Born
way.
And raised. Yeah.
Why did you say that in email?
Well, just for this moment. but I mean, when I say Philly, since you're from there, we're from the main line. Are you from Philly proper?
So technically I'm from the suburbs. So I'm like from Chestnut Hill area.
Okay.
Technically from Orland, but no one knows where that is.
No, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So grew up in the burbs. And now that I go to Drexel, living in the city in West Philly. So.
How do you feel about living in Philly full time?
I love it. It really puts you, as an artist and a creative, it puts you in a completely different environment. Because not that the burbs are bad, it's just like being around, people my age and being around the city and just being influenced by everything happening there is like so much better for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the second that we turned like became teenagers, like the day we turned 13, we just started going to like the Troc and the church.
Yeah,
and just going downtown as often as we possibly could.
Yep, yep.
I mean, and we can see Center City from our window, but there's a difference between being in the suburbs and then just being in it.
Exactly.
What are some of your favorite rooms to play in there?
So I've played the TLA, which is actually probably one of the best
that's
shows.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like a total feather in the cap.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Especially growing up there.
Oh yeah, it's like you gotta go to the Teal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's been a great place. I've played great shows at the Troc. Even places like the Hard Rock is great.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a venue when I was, I don't ever remember going to shows.
Really?
It was mostly like the 4040, which is not around anymore, but like the Troc and just a bunch of also house shows as well.
Right. Definitely.
What's the Drexel house party show scene like?
It's great. I mean, for what I do, being a producer in hip hop, there's not a lot of outlets.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff for rock music and punk music. And
right.
I'll go to those every now and then just because I love all types of music. But no, it's great. There's a lot of people at Drexel that do music, obviously, and people want to find new music all the time. So,
You have a pretty interesting background on things. So, you did School of Rock. You did drawing for Rock Legends. Tell us how you kind of got into all of this.
Yeah. So, I'll give you the lowdown.
Yeah.
So when I was maybe 5 or 6, my dad saw me drumming in the back seat. Just air drumming. And he was like, let's buy him a drum set. So when I was 6,
that's the only parent that's ever said that.
I know, right? Noise complaints.
Yeah.
So he bought me a drum set when I was 6 and, got enrolled in the School of Rock, which was the best thing I could have done.
For people who don't know, what is it?
Mm-hmm. So it's basically an after school program that kids can go to. And once a week you do lessons and then you do shows. So the shows consist of covers of they have a classic rock show and you do that. They have AC/DC, Pink Floyd, all that stuff. And so I did that from around age 8 to 14. But I stayed taking lessons there with a guy named Jim Love until I was probably 18. And they just taught me so much. So I was very, very grateful to go there.
What was one of the things, do you think, going to School of Rock kind of prepared you for that, maybe just being in bands and not getting a more quote unquote formal education?
Yeah. Well, it really taught me, first of all, how to format songs. Cause when you're young and you have to learn how to memorize songs, it kind of becomes engraved in you. The other great thing was that you get to be surrounded by kids your age that like music, because there's not a lot of musicians when you're younger that really want to take it seriously. So being in that environment was like priceless.
So how did you make the jump from, do you still play drums?
Oh yeah. Oh,
okay.
Sure.
So how did you make the transition, the jump from drums to producing and doing like electronic music?
So I had always been a drummer, and I was just yearning to do something more creative. Not that the drums aren't creative, but I wanted a little more creative control. And for my, I guess, when I was 14, my mom bought me this Native Instruments machine and Logic Pro.
Dude, your parents are awesome.
Dude, amazing.
That's
amazing.
Like two key moves that you've already set. That's great.
They set me up for success. Yeah. Shout out, Mom and Dad. But yeah, they got that for my birthday, and then I spent all of high school.
Did you ask for it, or did they just like, hey, we read about this thing, like we think you would be into this?
Well, my mom started noticing how much I liked hip hop and like making beats and stuff, and she actually saw it on, I think, like Apple's homepage. She just saw like Logic Pro go up, and she was like, hey, do you want this for your birthday? And I was like, yeah.
Amazing.
It's so awesome.
That's like so, I mean, okay, keep going. So yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so I spent like all of high school just sitting in my room figuring it out. Like, I didn't take lessons for my MPC or anything like that. I just YouTube stuff. And I took what I knew from drumming and music and just put it to it. So
can we hear something?
Yeah, of course. I'll put some on right now.
What are you gonna do for us first?
I'm gonna play a beat called Through You.
Okay. So you mentioned that you're at Drexel. How do you find the balance between being a musician and a student?
Tough.
Go on.
Yeah, so, I mean, both are very time-consuming and require a lot of attention and work. So, you know, sometimes I battle with choosing what comes first and what's more important. I mean, I love school, but...
what are you studying?
Music business.
Oh, so, I mean, it's relatable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely relatable. I mean, there's some times where you have to take classes that have nothing to do with what you want to do, which is always a pain. But no, I mean, I think I'm doing a good job kind of balancing it all. It just takes a lot of, you know, planning and also just sacrificing a lot of things, you know, as far as like not going out on the weekends and to catch up on work and stuff. So,
I mean, if this goes well, you'll be out like far enough, like that'll like kind of even out in the end.
Right.
How's the reception been to your music, and you know, where are you finding your place in the Philadelphia music scape?
It's really been great. I just started producing as Odd Kid Out about 8 or 9 months ago, and in that time frame, I've gotten myself to around 65,000 followers on Instagram, and
that's how I found you. I was just through Instagram.
Oh, really?
And your email was in there. I mean, that's how I found
right.
you.
Right. Yeah. Right. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It works.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's like an online business card. That's what I always say.
And it's kind of amazing, like, sometimes for bands, how hard it is to track them down.
Yeah.
But you made it real easy, which is why you're sitting here.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks. But no, it's good because I took the connections that I had from drumming and just, you know, being in the music scene and hit those people up and were like, hey, you know, I'm not just a drummer. I'm a producer, too. And been booked on some shows and keeping it moving. So
and how have, like, you found to, like, the older, like, Philadelphia music scene? Like, is it like you within the Drexel scene or are you like in the larger Philadelphia scene as well?
I would probably say I'm doing more outside of Drexel. Not that I don't have support from Drexel. I just find myself, you know, being in front of just Philadelphians, you know, before students. But yeah, because that's because I'm just always going out to the city trying to meet new people.
Have you toured yet?
As a producer, no.
Oh, okay.
As a drummer, yes.
Oh, okay. And I know that you mentioned that you'd worked with, like, some, like, Grammy people and mm-hmm. like, some older people in the game. What's the story there?
So I'm very close to the guy named David Ivory, who produced, like, The Roots and Patti LaBelle, Erykah Badu. And I work with Cam Hoff, who wrote a few Neo songs, worked with Beyonce. There's just a lot of people. Oh, the Nicola brothers, who worked with, like, Cypress Hill and Lauryn Hill and stuff. That came from drumming. And then, you know, using those relationships to push the production career has been helpful, too.
So did you work with them as a drummer?
Yeah,
first?
As a drummer. And, you know, I would intern at their studios in high school and, you know, just be like, if you need help, just call me, you know.
Any valuable lessons you picked up from interning or any advice you give to people who are, like, weighing, like, the pros and cons of... I'm all for interning, but mm-hmm. current generation are maybe not as down with that. Any advice that you can give or kind of, like... Here's why you should do it.
Yeah.
Or why you shouldn't do it.
You should do it. Yeah. Because, first of all, you're learning the entire... If you pick a good internship, you're learning the entire time. So that's already amazing. And two, you become close with that person. Because after you spend, like, you know, days after days in the studio with this same person, you know, you build a rapport and you get called to do work after your internship is over. So... You know, and especially if it's in another place away from where you're living, then you get a whole new environment, too. So,
yeah, I mean, and also the distance between the suburbs and the city at like 14 seems like a huge even now. You're like, oh, it's not that far.
Yeah.
But at that time, it's like it might as well be like a world away.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, the one thing that's interesting about producing, and you kind of touched on, is that it's like it is so collaborative. So how do you find the artists that kind of work with you in the project, or how do you weave them in to Odd Kid Out?
So I'm the type of person that just genuinely loves working with people. Now, if we want to talk about finding someone that's really, you know, meshing with my sound, I kind of struggle with that.
What do you mean?
Well, there's just not, you know... I don't know how to put it. There's just not a lot of... I haven't found many people that can really take my beats and do something with their voice over it that sounds like the way I want it to. That being said, I've definitely come across like a good amount of people that have, but the majority that I do, it doesn't feel like it necessarily meshes the greatest that it could.
Who are some of the people that like fit well with your music?
Yeah, so... I'm contradicting myself, but a good amount of people. A girl named Ashley Leone, who's out in Nashville now. I used to be her drummer, and she's got the second song on the EP that I just put out. And she sounds great on everything. She's got a beautiful voice. A rapper named Odyssey, who I'm close with, who's a high school friend. He's on the EP as well. This guy named Luke Bryan from Philly, a guitarist named Todd who sings through his guitar. He's amazing.
Acoustic or electric?
He does both, but mostly electric. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So he's awesome. The list definitely goes on. Yeah. I'm missing a few, but,
And like, how does, you know, where's your approach in the process? I mean, people are so varied. Is it the beats are finished first and then you hand it over? Is it, there's a framework? Like, how does the collaboration, How does it come together?
It definitely varies with who I work with. So a lot of the times I have people just come to my studio and shop for beats. So I'll just play them beats and, you know, you like it, cool. Other times I'll have people over, like my friend Mitch Beer. He comes over and we start from scratch. And both have their pros and cons. So,
do you have like one that you prefer over the other?
Well, I guess I like working from the ground up with the person because then you feel like you're creating something together. Mm. Sometimes I feel like I'm just dishing beats to people and like that's great, but I would much rather sit down with the person and really, you know, tailor it to what they would want.
Great. Let's hear something else.
Yeah, sure. I'll play a song off the EP.
Okay, perfect. What's this called?
I'm going to play Amore. This is the single.
Great.
Lo mio, voglio solamente meraviglioso te. Da quando ero piccola, avevo sogni di un fidanzato perfetto. Ti amo davvero, ti voglio bene. Salvami, baciami ancora. Amami ancora, carissimo, cuore mio. Dammi tutto del tuo amore, amore.
I know it's been a short time, but it feels like forever. You're always on my mind. More than ever, can't remember life without you. The memories just aren't there. I think that my heart always knew that I needed you there. Pretty sure I know what to call it, could call it love. But I don't want to move too fast, identifying us. Do the same rules apply when it's up to you?
And make chicks spend nights in thongs, sorta kinda not quite for long.
Yo, you really drawn right now.
Love when I hear love when I spit.
Yeah.
Paint a picture, she in love with the shit perfect. She in love with the drip, so dog, I can't tell it's a chick. Nah. See, she in love with my click. Get money, dress, fly, talk shit. I bet you play the pawn in the shit. Join me like Melissa Joan Hart and shit.
Oh yeah, you join shit.
Need a chick to make a partner and shit. We can take a trip to the big car dealership.
Come on, then we
think
out.
You know who you all dealing with. That no murder nigga killing shit. Nigga flow like water, BP, oil still spilling shit. Ball clothes, nigga still feeling it. One bottle left, nigga still chilling it. She still riding, nigga still willing it.
Who are the vocalists on that?
So that's Gogo Morrow, who's a singer from Philly.
Good name.
Yeah, dude, yeah, she's awesome. And then the rapper is Bonic, who actually used to be, you know, killing the game in Philly a couple years back. But yeah, he's the man.
So what was the process of making this EP? This is your first one, right?
Yeah, so I released something senior year as like, you know, blah blah blah.
That's fine.
No one knows.
Unless you bring it up, no one's gonna know. So it's up to you how you want to tell that story. We'll just go back and say this is the first.
Yeah. So this is the first Odd Kid Out release. Yeah. So I wanted it to be, the way I put it is like an autobiography of music, basically. So I wanted to tell my story through music, basically. It's very much a story. You have to listen to it from the beginning to the end, and the interludes within it, you know, kind of tell it. But I kind of wanted to make something that made people think and something that was cathartic to people, you know.
An EP is, you know, really about editing and, you know, not turning into LP. So how were you able to tell your story, or how did you kind of craft the story over like a shorter form?
So the EP was actually originally like 15 songs. And
it, of course.
Yeah. So yeah. I had to cut it down.
All gold.
Right.
All gold.
So I had to cut it down to 6. And that was probably the hardest part of the EP, was figuring out how to make up for all that lost storytelling. So what I kind of left it up to was the emotions within the beats to kind of speak on that. And then there's little tiny little snippets of things that you'll catch at the beginning and the end, and if you take the time to sit and think and piece it all together, it'll make sense.
Do you have like who are your like trusted ears, like who do you send before it gets like the final lock?
So my roommate Scott.
Is that default?
No.
Like, did you get paired freshman year? And
Dude, so we've been friends since high school, and we went to Drexel together. And he, you know, I'll call him into the studio and be like, "Hey, I need you to come listen to this," because I trust him very much. Another person was my manager, Kirkland Lynch. I would send it to him, let him hear it. And then the people I was talking about before, like David Ivory and all those people that really have a good ear and that I trust. And friends like, you know, my friend Mitch Beer that I was talking about before, he helped out a lot too. So,
and is it like open for refinement? Like, do you take their notes in, or is it more like, or how do you take that in, like, even if you feel it's like done? Or where do you send it to them in the process?
I send it to them when I feel excited about it. Hmm. And it takes me, you know, I don't necessarily get hyped up about something when I make it. It kind of takes a little bit until I feel like it's at that point. And when I send it, I don't send it with the mind frame that it's done. I very much want someone to beat me up with their comments. Like, I want as much feedback as possible, because I'm jaded, because it's my own ear. So,
oh,
you know,
so your skin's pretty thick, or like just something?
Oh yeah. Okay. No, I want people to tell me what's up, because I'll make the changes. I'm not.
Has someone like ever said something that kind of like slid right beneath the breastplate, kind of right, cut you a little bit?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me at all.
And what's cool about this is that you released it on BitTorrent too.
Yeah.
So how did that, that seems like such a modern kind of move.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about?
Well, my manager and I thought it was a great move because they have so many listeners. And when we got approached about the situation, you know, we kind of just wanted to jump on it. And also the great thing about it was that we got to do this premium edition type thing, where people could enter their emails and then they'll get, like, you know, a more video, and they'll get some pictures and stuff. So it was just a way to be more personal with the fans.
What happened to the other songs? I was going to ask for the other songs, the 9 songs that didn't make it onto the EP. Is that just like EP2, EP3? Do they just kind of live somewhere else?
I don't know. I mean, they may reemerge at some point. I mean, they're sitting in my iTunes library, but I want to do something with them for sure.
Plans for the summer? Tour?
Yes, I'm
actually out in the studio.
I'm actually headed to LA for the summer, and I'm interning.
Where are you interning?
Red Light Management.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
The more business of the music side.
Exactly.
They're great.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited. And the great thing is that, I'm going to keep talking about my manager, he lives out there. So I'll be able to really, you know, spend time with him and work on my craft on my days that I'm off. So,
I mean, don't knock a good team.
No.
Like, you can go very, very far. Like, you should really like your manager.
Oh my gosh.
And your day to day and everything.
Yeah.
Do you know we're gonna live in LA?
No, that's the one thing I haven't figured out, and it's stressing me out.
You gonna get a car?
I don't know. Can you only rent it when you're like 25?
Yeah, I guess that is a is a concern. I don't know. I work out there, and I mm-hmm. have been out there for 3 years. I have not rented a car in 3 years. Uber's like kinda really cheap out
there. I heard
there.
The bus is the move.
Yeah, I think, like, the rule is that as long as you're willing to pick up, like, all the Ubers, mm-hmm. you can probably, like, get rides for half the things.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. You just have to, like, you can't be the person without the car and be right. like, oh, I would have gotten that one. You have to right. be the first to offer.
Right.
And I think I don't know. It depends. And if you're going to be in the studio most of the time anyway, or at work.
I'm going to try and get housing, like, right next to where I'm working, so I don't have to, like, you know, travel too far.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one thing that kills me. I mean, it's the most classic East Coast complaint, but the traffic really... yeah. It's, like, the most, like, stereotypical thing for me to say. It's, like, the traffic. Well, I know we want to leave a lot of time for you to do a freestyle at the end, just to kind of let you spread your legs and take us for a walk. But where can people find you? How can they add to that ever-growing Instagram account, book you, shop for beats, build songs from the ground up?
Yeah, so you can find me on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all under Odd Kid Out, and that's ODDKIDOUT.
You are so well-trained. It's amazing. It's incredible.
Thanks, man. Yeah, no. It's really easy. Just type in Odd Kid Out. I'll pop up. You'll see mine.
Cool.
See my face.
I want to thank our guests today. Shout out to the family. Shout out to Berlin. And any name for the freestyle? You're just going to just let it go?
Yeah, this is just kind of like a little thing I put together.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for being on here, and take it away.
Yeah, thank you so much.
talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.